straight into the microphone to the people in the back.
Thanks. This is a short story called The Vanishing Act. Liam was chatting up a girl at the bar. He told her about the time Switchboard forwarded all the phones to him, but his phone was already forwarded to Switchboard. And 10 minutes later, a client rang the main number and all the phones exploded. The girl laughed and brushed her hair out of her eyes and asked him what his name was. Hers was Neris, and she spoke of a pug called Mr. Wu and the healing power of ginger, all of which was Sanskrit to Liam, who was more interested in getting his hands on the two loosely tethered barrage balloons Neris was keeping firmly under wraps. Most of the girls Liam had met at the club were about as libidinous as a panda and needed a winch to get in the mood, but that Friday night, after a lot of promises were made, Liam accompanied Neris back to flat 17 Glenbuck Road, stayed her hand as she fumbled with her key, and kissed her as the strip lights flickered. There was nothing in her fridge. He wondered how much she was paying for the place. Liam hunted fruitlessly for some Alka-Seltzer before going in search of Neris down the hallway and easing her plywood bedroom door aside with a finger. He stepped across the cluttered floor and took Neris in his arms as she shivered in the moonlight, kissed her forehead gently, and told her if she was really serious about getting the clutch fixed on her Audi, he knew a garage that could fit her in on Monday. He pecked his way down towards her neck, drawing his index finger down the curve of her naked back until she shrank away, stifling a squeal. Grinning, she bit her bottom lip and pulled him towards the bed, their bodies marrying while Mr. Wu observed them from his basket lair. They were gentle, then frenzied, then playful, then sleepy, and Liam listened as Neris explained that in India, ginger was applied as a paste to the temples to relieve headaches and consumed when suffering from a cold. It was almost 2 a.m. when they coupled again, but as Neris shimmied beneath him, Liam couldn't help feeling some of that ginger paste might actually have been in order. He felt sure something was amiss. It may have been the furniture polish he'd been drinking at the club, or the sudden Neris-shaped explosion of sexual energy once they'd got back to the flat, but he couldn't help shifting a nagging sense of unease. Then, as Neris scrunched handfuls of duvet and Liam risked a hernia, something happened that entirely vindicated Liam's instincts. At the pinnacle of neuromuscular euphoria, the acme of physical ecstasy, Liam cried out, shuddered, and opened his eyes wide to find, beyond all reason, the sun appeared to have risen. A gale force wind had whipped up around him, and he was no longer installed amid the girly clutter of Neris's inner sanctum, but was, in fact, in free fall above a verdant, undulating rainforest. Liam managed a couple of startled yells before he crashed, frantically windmilling his arms through a canopy of leaves, got his foot caught in some tangled vines, was upended and then dropped unceremoniously onto a carpet of rotting vegetation. Above him, between gently nodding branches, he saw a flock of parakeets scattering in an arc of blue sky. He looked to his left and noticed an army of bullet ants swarming over a twisted root. To his right, a howler monkey scampering up a twisted bough. It was like God had switched over to the Discovery Channel, but Liam had stayed cast as the lead. He stood, legs concertinaing beneath him, then spun around, spluttering, swearing, wondering what the fucking hell was going on, trying to comprehend the extraordinary sight before him. Glenbuck Road was gone. In its place was endless jungle. The Amazon Basin comprises 1.4 billion acres of forest, the largest and most species-rich tract of tropical rainforest in the world. And Liam Cunningham had been set down in the middle of it with no money, no identification, no passport, and no clothes. Cursing himself for not paying closer attention to the Ray Mears documentary he'd seen, Liam lurched naked through the undergrowth like some latter-day Bigfoot, surviving on leaves and rainwater, knocking himself out on trees and squelching through bogs of mud. Odds were, the forest was more likely to be flattened by an asteroid than Liam was to stumble on rescue. But nevertheless, after 5 days of abject hell, he burst naked and mud-spattered into the clearing of Exploration Inc.'s Peru adventure, studded with thorns, dehydrated, emaciated, his body ravaged by insect bites, raving he had a devil cock and had been hurled into that twisted hell as penance for a life of reckless pleasure-seeking. The tourists freaked. Room was made for him in the boat back to Iquitos. He was flown to Lima and then transferred to Ecuador. He applied for an emergency passport, kipped on the plane back to Gatwick, tubed it to Stockwell, and closed the door of his flat on what had been without doubt the single most terrifying experience of his life. A coma, 6 cans of Heineken, and 16 hours of fitful slumber later, and Liam chained Marlborough Lights, daring himself to think about what had happened. Well, what had happened? Did every bloke who had sex with Neris end up in Shitsville? Was there a support group, some jungle settlement populated entirely by her previous lovers? Or, by God, was it him? Liam stared accusingly at his own treacherous crotch. Dare he cup his chap? Was that what set it off? He took a breath and summoned every ounce of courage within him. Well, there was only one way to settle this, he thought, unbuckling his belt and one unrealistic fantasy about the blonde on the checkout in boots later, and Liam found himself tumbling out of a South American sky once again. It took him just 3 days to reach home that time. He was beginning to get the hang of it. Sex, for Liam, had always been an escape from the mundane, but this was ridiculous. On the plane back home for the second time, he necked quadruple vodkas and squeezed the bridge of his nose. So that was it then. Every time he had an orgasm, he teleported to Peru. Great. Why couldn't he teleport back to his flat? Thank you, God. He'd received a single text from Neris since their night together, which read, "Where'd you disappear to?" But even so, moodily appraising his dire situation, he wished Neris was with him then, massaging her simple certainties into his temples, recommending various herbal tinctures and ringing in sick to work on his behalf. Liam had always thought sex was safe if it didn't end in school fees or a rash. To that, he now added, getting his ass faxed to the other side of the planet. What possible good could come from all of this? He got his answer sooner than he expected. He was ordering another vodka and grimacing at the scary nun in the seat next to him when there was an ear-splitting bang, the plane tipped crazily, and the next thing he knew, it was raining hand luggage. In the typhoon gale that swept through the plane, Liam clocked the hostess, spread-eagled on the roof of the cabin, and realised if he wanted to survive, now was not the time to stand on ceremony. As EasyJet flight number 749 dropped out of the sky towards the Peruvian Andes, the loudest voice by far was the nun next to Liam screaming her head off, not at the luggage hemorrhaging out of the side of the plane, but at the frantically masturbating Englishman in the seats next to her, dramatically demonstrating that only the good die young by vanishing before her goggling eyes. When Liam crashed through the canopy of trees and rolled over on the ground, suddenly it didn't matter anymore. It had worked. It had actually worked. And he was still gloriously alive, whatever Maria von Trapp had thought. And he leapt to his feet and whooped and beat his chest and cried out a great, exultant, yes. All this wasn't quite what Neris had expected from the man of her dreams. But over set menu B at Wong Keys, she said her mother had always advised you had to make the best of a bad situation, and perseverance was key. It proved good advice. Liam, for all his recent adventures, still couldn't keep his paws off Neris, but now it was in his best interests to linger and prolong the magic as much as possible. And gradually, he became the sort of lover Neris thought only existed in the movies. Once in a while, when he did melt from her arms, he always knocked on her door again 3 days later, just that little bit more lean and slightly more tanned, looking like Michael Douglas in Romancing the Stone. Neris, for her part, claimed to have died and gone to heaven. Liam couldn't help thinking there was a time he couldn't teleport to Peru for love nor money. Now he practically had a freedom pass. Neris earnestly told Liam that she believed the secret of happiness was great sex and work you enjoyed. And while his job had never exactly floated his hollowed out tree trunk, Liam couldn't help noticing some improvements in that department too. Mates at work found he no longer got stressed out at irate customers or orders that went awry, or even when Switchboard forwarded all the phones to him. While one or two cynical types suspected he was zombied out on antidepressants, the truth was Liam really knew what stress was, and the toner running out on the photocopier no longer cut it the way it used to. He returned from his occasional jungle forays, ever more adept at survival and coping with the decidedly odd, and soon managers started to rely on him in a crisis and talked about him for the supervisor position. Before long, Liam and Neris moved into a pretty house in Welwyn Garden City, and that Christmas, there they were, the eternal couple, oblivious to anything but happiness and quietly appreciative of the downright weird. One night, Liam and Neris met a couple of friends for set menu B. There was rather a lot of self-congratulation and a mutual appreciation society sprang up, but at one point, Lucy, wife to James, steepled her fingers and pressed Liam to say what it was he liked about her best friend Neris. Liam laughed and couldn't help thinking of the night they met, the one that ended with him thinking he was a dead man and parts of his anatomy should be cut off. How could he possibly explain the bizarre sequence of events that had led to bliss with Neris? He said, as if searching for the right word, "She just transports me." And Lucy and James smiled at the romance of that, raised their glasses for a toast, and said they knew exactly what he meant. Thank you very much.